Summer, the best time of year, usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices. But what if there's another way? With IKEA, your summer plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. Here, everyone can have lounge chair access, no reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, we have all the essentials you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Start planning a better summer with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
If you're on a GLP-1, you're probably loving the results. You look good. But how do you feel? How about the stomach issues? Loss of muscle mass? Lacking energy? All of those side effects can take a toll. So now what? The answer is GNC. We have solutions that can help address those side effects and make sure you don't get knocked off your path. Because when it comes to living healthy, we're all about it. And that includes keeping you going on your GLP-1 journey. GNC.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. It is another episode of Dadcast. I'm JP. He is Nick. How are you, Nick?
I'm good. My dreams about questioning something just got crushed, so. I'm still good.
We can discuss that here in this episode. Today on the show, man, we've got an amazing guest. He is a writer, producer, showrunner for some amazing TV shows that I know you are very well aware of, and some old school favorite. I say old school. That makes I'm kind of aging ourselves here. They're really not that old, but some of my favorite movies, example, Demolition Man back in the day. He is Mr. Peter Lankoff. How are you, sir?
I'm good. I'm great. Actually, really nice to be on this, and thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. We thank you, man. Welcome to the show. Now, as a rite of passage, the very first question we always ask right here on Dadcast is, are you a dad?
Yeah. I've been a dad for a long time.
All right.
I have four kids. So, yeah.
Four kids. Awesome. Names, ages, boys, girls?
So, youngest, I have two boys, two girls. Two boys, 14 and 17. Jack's the youngest, 14. Sam's 17. And I have twin daughters that are both 27 years old, named Courtney and Arielle. Very different personalities, very different in terms of looks, everything. But those are the four.
Okay. Now, my first question, then, or second question, I should say, right off the bat, then, is in your experience, because Nick and I are both going through it as we speak. How did you get through that 14 to 19 years with the girls? And was your experience like ours very difficult? You know, they decide to hate us and dad's just not, you know, an important part of their life. And they, you know, they want to, you know, spread their wings and fly. And how did you get through that? How was it for you?
Well, I have a really, really good relationship with my girls. I would say that, before the boys came along, I really was a girl dad and spent a lot of time with them. When they were growing up, in those early years, I actually was focusing more on screenwriting. And so I was working from home a lot. I wasn't going into an office. So I was around for a lot of the formative years of them sort of getting their personalities in sorts. But yeah, I mean, it's hard when they, you know, when as they get older and they become teenagers and, you know, there's cliques in schools and there's peer pressure and there's boyfriends and all those things. I got lucky that I was able to navigate it semi-successfully. I think successfully. I don't want to, you know, say everything was easy. But yeah, I think they leaned more on their mom with certain issues.
Yeah.
I think I had it a little easier than she did. Yeah, it's tough. But I'm actually finding that comparatively with my boys, the girls were fairly easy. Boys a little tougher. And I think, you know, it's that it's that testosterone, it's them sort of becoming men and marking their territory, a lot different than my girls. And I think we're doing a good job, and they're great kids, but very different. It's a bigger wrangling job when it comes to boys, at least in my experience so far.
Yeah. You know, it's pretty accurate. I have also noticed too, in myself, I have an 18-year-old daughter, a 12-year-old son, and a 9-year-old daughter. The 9-year-old is my little princess, my little baby girl. Yeah, she could do no wrong, even though she is the most feisty, full of sass child that I have. But I notice myself treating her different than I do my son. And I wouldn't say it's necessarily better or worse, but I'm softer with her. I'm a little bit more rugged with the son, and the way I talk with him, the way I treat him, the way he's punished, the way he's taught, in all aspects. And it's starting right now. Nick was privy to it a couple nights ago. He's 12, and he's starting to exactly what you said. He kind of marking his own territory. He's on the precipice of puberty. Man, that's a difficult sentence to say. The precipice of puberty. That should be a good band name or a movie. But anyway, I'm getting off track.
Sounds like a great book about parenting. Right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, write that down, Nick. But it's starting to a little bit of tug of war happening with the boy, which I haven't noticed with the girls. I think you're pretty accurate when it comes to that.
Just to go back for a second, I think boys, they really are testing you. It's almost like the Wild Kingdom is like, you know, they're testing you to see if you're really the dominant male in the house. They find any weakness and they're taking over that position, that spot.
Right.
I find that I have they're very strong-willed boys. They have their opinions and it's harder at this age right now, at 14, 17, to parent them than it did my girls.
Yeah. Well, you know, also your girls, that was 10 years ago, right? Give or take. Social media was around, but it obviously wasn't nearly as just a part of everyone's life as it was back then. And I don't want to blame that on why it's getting difficult, but it certainly is not, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I hear you, man. We're all right there with you. It's difficult. It is tough.
This is like a support group, really. It's not a podcast. It's for us to support each other. I love
absolutely.
It.
Well, exactly. It's all of that intertwined in everything, you know.
And I keep starting over so we can keep this going forever.
Yeah, Nick.
That's the plan there.
Nick, I don't know if you're aware, but he has 873 children, and the 873rd just came to us last month. 2 months ago.
Wow. 6 weeks ago. Yeah.
Mazel tov. Congratulations.
Thanks.
It's only seven, actually. You know, 807.
That's pretty good.
Once you get past three or four, it's all the same.
I've got Nick Cannon to look up to. I've got to, you know, try to
catch your role model.
And my role model. I aspire to be like him. Yeah.
If you aspire to be like him, you still got a few more kids left.
Kids and a few million dollars to make.
That's funny. I was at Disneyland a couple months ago with my lady, and we're walking through the park, and there was a section where I'm not even kidding. There was hundreds and hundreds of strollers. And she walks by and she's like, "Oh, Nick Cannon's here," just under her breath as we walk by.
That's a great joke.
I'm like, "Well done, lady. That was good.
That was fantastic."
That's a great joke.
So, and being in the position that you are, the job you have, what you do, and as a career, has the time come where your kids, do they show any interest in film, TV, or anything like that? And if not, are they going to be like, "Hey, Dad, throw me in one of your flicks"?
Well, first of all, the funny thing is all four kids have probably not seen anything I've done from beginning to end.
What?
And it's probably if I shove it on them, they still wouldn't, you know, they still, I just allow them to sort of like find my stuff if they want to.
Right.
I don't force them to watch anything that I've done. You know, I had a movie a few years ago come out called RIPD. It really was for kids. I thought, okay, finally I've done something that my kids, because at that age, you know, this is going back, I think it came out in 2003 or 2013, sorry. I thought, oh, they're perfect age to watch this. They had no interest. All their friends saw it except them. I just had a sequel to that come out on Netflix. They haven't seen it. My son, Sam, who's 17, I think through osmosis somehow found, and a lot through his mom, he found a love for photography and filmmaking. So he's been doing a lot of that, and he's gotten a lot of paid jobs doing that, and he's really, really talented. I think more talented than I was at that age in terms of like the ability to express myself artistically. He's really, really good at his craft, and he wants to go to film school, but he doesn't come to me he goes to his mom more for help than me, ironically, and he waits until he's on the verge of finishing something, and then he'll come to me. Almost the way, you know, I'm like the executive producer in the family. Like, he'll show it to me when he's ready.
Right. Yeah.
But he'll develop it with his mom until that moment. No, my kids have not, other than Sam, they haven't really showed interest in the entertainment business or what I do. I think they've only come to the sets a few times. They weren't eager to do it. You know, I'd have to lure them if there was a food truck one day or, but it's just was my job, you know?
And
they don't, again, I had a movie come out last week or 2 weeks ago, like this Liam Neeson movie, like a big, you know, it's like a semi-big movie. And I said, hey, let's go all of us and watch it. And none of them had interest at all.
I would just call Pauly Shore and be like, hey, Pauly, come on over. Let's leave son-in-law out on the table. Let's have dinner.
It's funny. They haven't even seen son-in-law. They haven't seen any of those.
Man, I must have watched that movie 100 times growing up. That's like, man, that's my teenage years right there.
Well, Pauly and I, when we made, I was like 25, he was 24. I mean, we were like kids, given, you know, money to make a movie and just,
I can't imagine the amount of fun you guys must have had too. It's like great cast. Just like, it just seems like a ton of fun. Jury Duty.
It was a lot of fun because we actually shot on location in Visalia, which is, you know, a little north of LA. Mm-hmm. So we were all, you know, staying at the same hotel and, you know, we were kids. I think Carla Gugino, who played, you know, the sort of lead female role, it was like her second film. Tiffany Thiessen, what she was, I think she was the veteran of everybody because she was on a TV show. I think Saved by the Bell.
Yeah.
And she was like the veteran of in terms of talent. And it was funny you mentioned Pauly because Pauly and I have been really close friends since 91, whenever, and we shot it in 92. So yeah, he and I go back a long way.
Nick, so awesome. A little bit of professional advice. That was your in to ask the question you always ask of every single guest that comes on the show.
I've learned from Brian. Wait till later, shoot an email or a text and ask.
Fair enough. All right. So in the course of your career, Peter, how much time was spent away from your children, if any, that you would see as abnormal from the average dad out there? Is that, you know, does that apply to you?
I think, I always made it a practice to be home for dinner.
Nice. Okay.
And that was always important. And sometimes I'd go back to, I would work in my home office after dinner, but I always made sure I was home for dinner. I always made sure that I was there in the morning to see them go to school. So it didn't mean that I only worked 9 to 5. It just meant that I was in my house those hours, or, you know, that moment
right.
when they left the school, and then, you know, dinner time. There are times when I was out of town, whether, you know, for long periods of time, but I was never gone for more than a month when I shot a pilot, which, you know, I didn't do that many times. When we were doing Hawaii 5.0, I used to go to Hawaii 1 week a month for the first 6-7 years. But, you know, with FaceTime and, you know, I was always around. I never was gone for long periods of time. And also made sure, and they're not, my kids are not sports kids. So it wasn't like I was missing soccer on.
If you're on a GLP-1, you're probably loving the results. But how do you feel? All of those side effects can take a toll. So now what? Get to GNC. We'll help with solutions to address those side effects and keep you going on your journey. GNC.
Summer, the best time of year, usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices. But what if there's another way? With IKEA, your summer plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. Here, everyone can have lounge chair access, no reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, we have all the essentials you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Start planning a better summer with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
Weekend or
right.
But I was there for anything significant. If they had something that was going on. But the dinners was the most important, that I was there for that. So they had some sort of sense of who their dad was, and we got to like chat a little bit. So
good stuff. Now I do got to ask, cause I fall into that category. I'm the youngest of four, and there's a 10-year gap between the next youngest and my siblings. Nick has a baby, so I'm assuming something's going on with that. It's just going to be you and I for a sec, apparently. With your children. Oh, there she is. There's baby Sophie.
Well, she's not going to wake up.
Oh, there's a good smile. Look there at that. Oh,
there she is. Good. Brace that neck, Nick. Brace that neck. Come on.
Oh, my God.
Debut. All right. Bye, guys.
Thank God my wife isn't on, because she she would just take over that.
With your kids being the twin girls are older by 10 years.
Yeah.
Was that on purpose, that age gap, or it just, is this how things worked out?
No, a different wife in between. No. Just
okay.
Two wives.
That would make sense. Okay.
Yeah.
That kind of falls in the category with Nick. Did you know Nick was fixed? He was done. Stick a fork in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then, well, Nick, why don't you tell the story? Go ahead.
Yeah, so I met my now wife and got married, and she wanted to have kids because she didn't have any kids. So I got unfixed, and we went through IVF, and it was definitely like crazy. It was a lot. It's a lot different going through IVF than it is just having a baby the normal way. There's a lot of stuff that you don't hear from the guy's perspective on it. That it is. It's tough. It's weird. It's all kinds of crazy stuff. But we've got a 2-year-old and our new baby Sophie out of the
IVF. And the 2-year-old has most recently, via social media, which for the love it or hate it, in this case, I'm going to love it, has graduated to G.I. Joe's, Nick. I'm so proud for you. I'm so proud for you.
Dude, I'm so happy.
Really?
Oh, man, we opened up G.I. Joe's. So when I found out I was having a boy, I started buying G.I. Joe's like crazy. So I have like literally probably 30 or 40 G.I. Joe.
But you have the new ones, not the vintage.
They're the knockoff ones. They're not. Yeah, if I had the originals, we would not be opening those. Those that'd be my retirement. But yeah, they're the knockoffs of the old 80s G.I. Joe. So we unboxed a bunch last night, and we've been playing with them, and he's just super stoked on it.
Years ago, a friend of mine bought me the same G.I. Joe that I had as a kid, and it's on my desk, and it is like my prized possession. That was growing up playing with G.I. Joe's was the coolest thing ever. So
now, are we talking the full size ones or the action figure?
No, the little ones. Oh, yeah. No, Now I'm talking like in 60s and 70s.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm talking about like bearded G.I. Joe that the beard felt like a real beard.
There we go.
Right. Yeah. No, that's great. I wish someone, hey, if anyone ever happens to, if anyone, listen to me, of course someone's going to see this show. We get thousands upon thousands of views on every single episode. If one of you watching or listening would ever feel it in your heart to get JP his childhood favorite toy, that would be an original unboxed Optimus Prime Transformer. Okay, I'm a kid from the 80s. I was six.
I've got a real quick, we'll go, funny story about 80s toys. My cousin and I had, like, we were big time into sports card collecting, G.I. Joe, Star Wars, and Ninja Turtles. Like, we had everything you possibly could imagine. We had one that we played with, one that was unboxed. Our moms decided after we grew up and left the houses and got married, had kids, it was a good idea to go through the old room at my cousin's house and sell everything at 25 cents an action figure. At the time, this was probably like 20 years ago, we had a Darth Vader with the weird special coat thing he had on. It was like a very rare one. It was worth like 30 grand at the time.
Cape?
Yep, a cape. That's the word. She sold it for 25 cents. We had King Griffey. We had 10 King Griffey Jr. Upper Deck rookie cards in perfectly mint condition that we had sent off to get graded, and they were like 9.8s. Sold them for $1 a piece. Yeah.
It's a damn shame. It's a damn shame.
Yeah. I still don't talk to my mom.
By the way, I was the one who bought. I was the one who bought all that stuff. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
He'll gladly sell it back to you for your.
I remember a few years back, we go to his house with his parents' old house, and we're like, "Man, I wonder if all that stuff's still in the room." Because we got kind of like that. The idea was just to let it sit there, and like we'll pick it up when we're older and go through it, divvy it up, and have an auction and. We go back and the room is empty. We're like, oh my God, what happened? Call our moms. Hey, oh yeah, we had a yard sale years ago. Oh my God.
Yeah, that's terrible.
I collected comics all through the 70s and I had a great comic book collection. I also had all the original Mad magazines and Crack magazine and Plop. And when I moved to LA, I put them all in garbage bags and put them in my near the furnace of my house and I thought no one's going to go near the furnace, but I hid them behind the furnace. And my mom called me one day and said, I found all your old comic books. I gave them away because they were near the furnace. And I thought they would burn up. Even though I made sure they wouldn't, gave them all away. So that was, you know, probably $100,000 worth of comic books that she just gave away, thinking that I had mistakenly put them in the wrong place. So I feel you,
Oh, this is just terrible, terrible.
I hope our moms go back and watch this and learn how to parent better.
Or dads, you know, watching this, you know, don't throw your kids' stuff away. And if you got to, you know, run a U-Haul or a storage locker or something and put that stuff away.
A phone call first would have been great. That's probably
text these days. These days it's easier to not make these mistakes too.
Yeah.
I want to take you back 28 years, Peter, give or take a few months, to that fateful day you were notified somehow, some way, that you were in fact going to become a dad. Can you recall the emotions of that day?
Yeah, I actually remember I was in a bedroom and I was on the floor, like just like kicking my feet up in the air. I was so excited.
Nice.
I got married. I got married at 25. We decided not to try to have kids for a few years because we just wanted to travel. And, you know, I was starting my career. I was like in my career, but, you know, I was trying to build my career. And then we spent about a year trying to have a kid. And when it happened, I was like insanely happy. And also it was perfect because I think I had just turned 30 and it was like perfect. It was exactly sort of how you would plan it.
Gotcha. No fear at all?
No, I mean, I was terrified. Look, you know, here's the thing about, you know, being in the entertainment business, it is so scary because nothing's guaranteed, you know, and I don't have a trade. Like, I can't take a piece of wood and build a table, or I can't take a welding torch and build something. All I have is what's really in my head. So that's where my income comes from. So this, you know, knowing that you're going to have kids and that responsibility, and you're going to have to start saving for college, that's terrifying for sure. Yeah. Especially being in this business, it's like, you know, you don't know if you're going to not work, you know, after your last project. So yeah, it was terrifying. But I just, you know, somebody told me many, many years ago, bet on yourself. I always bet on myself. So I felt that if I, you know, with the kids, I'll figure out a way, even if I had to go and like teach screenwriting, whatever I needed to do to support my family, I would have done. I just was excited to have kids and, you know, terrified about supporting them. But
yeah.
I think everybody goes through that. That's not unique.
I agree. I would disagree, yeah, however, on the fact you just made a statement says you don't have a trade. The fact that you can put pen to paper and put out just beautiful pieces of work that turn into what they turn into, my friend, that is absolutely a trade and an art, in my book.
Well, so thank you.
I would never say that one again. All right. So 28 years ago, you find out you're having kids. Nine months later, were you in the room? Were you there for the birth? And how was that?
Well, first of all, it wasn't 9 months. They were born premature.
Okay. Okay.
My wife and I at the time, we had gone in for a regular checkup, and the doctor said, you know, baby A wasn't getting enough food. Baby B was taking all the food. And if you want a chance for both of them to survive, you should give birth. We should take out the babies today.
Okay.
That was 2 months early. And we literally ran to the hospital, and they took the babies out that day. One was 1 pound, 14 ounces. The other one was 2'11". They both were in incubators for, one was for 4 weeks. The other was for 6 weeks. I mean, it was scary, terrifying, because, you know, I was hoping, you know, I sort of knew when you have twins that you could, you know, have them a little bit early, but I didn't think 2 months early. And the 1 pound, 14 ounce was tiny. I remember holding her, I don't know if you could see my fingers, but I don't know where I got to, like literally holding her neck, like, her back of her head with my fingers like this. She was so small, and we were scared out of our minds. And I would sit there by, you know, the incubator drawing pictures, and I would put them at the top of the incubator, and like the characters would say, breathe, literally just survive, do whatever you can to make it to the next day. It was scary.
Wow.
So I don't think I celebrated having kids for a few months at least.
Yeah. Well, it's you're playing it safe, and that's absolutely scary.
Yeah.
Now fast forward a few years. Does baby A or B still eating more food than her sister? I mean, is she demanding more?
No. Their personalities did not connect at all with what they were in the womb. They're both very generous individuals. And
are they identical?
No, okay. Fraternal, very fraternal. Different. But you would think that baby B would be the spoiled one, would be
the bully,
more needy, and not at all. So I think that was just a competitive thing in the womb that was going on. So,
all right. We are with screenwriter, writer, producer, showrunner of all. I mean, I've said this a few times, with other guests. He's practically written every show you've ever seen on TV. He is Mr. Peter Lankoff. That is it for part one of Dadcast podcast with Peter Lankoff. Peter, thank you so much for taking your time. To everyone watching, don't go anywhere, because part two is going to come up in one single week where we're going to ask some more fun questions and then maybe steer a little bit clear of the dad talk and get into what Nick really wants to talk about. And that is questions regarding TV shows and movies that Peter Lankoff has produced and written and all that good stuff. Peter, thank you so much, man. And we'll see you in just a few minutes.
Thank you for having me.
To everyone watching, I'm sorry, Nick, to everyone watching worldwide, wherever you may be, thank you very much. Make sure you like, subscribe, comment, do all the things, and we'll catch you on next week's episode. See you.